Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to Compugen's second quarter 2020 results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. An audio webcast of this call is available in the investor section of Compugen's website, www.cgen.com.
Mm-hmm.
As a reminder, today's call is being recorded. I would now like to introduce Ilana Holtzman, Compugen's Director of Investor Relations and Corporate Communications. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator, and thank you all for joining us today. With me from Compugen are Dr. Anat Cohen-Dayag, President and CEO, Dr. Henry Adewoye, Chief Medical Officer, Ari Krashin, CFO and COO, and Dr. Eran Ophir, VP Research and Drug Discovery. Before we begin, I would like to read the following regarding forward-looking statements. During the course of this conference call, the company may make projections or other forward-looking statements regarding future events or future business outlook, our development efforts and their outcome, our discovery platform, anticipated progress and timeline for our programs, financial and accounting-related matters, as well as statements regarding our cash position. We wish to caution you that such statements reflect only the company's current expectations and that actual events or results may differ materially. You are kindly referred to the risk factors and cautionary language contained in the documents the company filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission, including the company's most recent annual report on Form 20-F filed on February 24, 2020. The company undertakes no obligation to update projections or forward-looking statements in the future. I will now turn the call over to Anat. Anat?
Thank you, Ilana. Good morning and good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our second quarter 2020 corporate and financial update. As Ilana mentioned, with me today are Dr. Henry Adewoye, our Chief Medical Officer, Ari Krashin, our CFO and COO, and Dr. Eran Ophir, our VP Research and Drug Discovery. After my prepared comments, Henry will review the progress across our clinical programs, and Ari will review our financial statements and position. We will all be available for the Q&A session. We have reached an exciting new phase of development at Compugen. Today, there are three clinical programs, COM701, COM902, and Bay-190-5254, addressing drug targets we discovered computationally. COM701 and COM902, developed internally, are designed to strategically evaluate the DNAM axis as a potentially transformative checkpoint axis for cancer immunotherapy treatment. Henry will provide detailed updates across these programs later in the call, but first, I want to share what we believe are important developments for Compugen and the broader immuno-oncology space that leave us increasingly optimistic about our drug candidates and distinctive clinical development path. As a reminder, Compugen's internal computational discovery platform has enabled the discovery of two important new checkpoints in the DNAM axis, PVRIG, discovered by Compugen, and TIGIT, discovered by Compugen and at the same time also by others. Our lead program, COM701, targets PVRIG, while COM902, now also in the clinic, targets TIGIT. It is important to note that we identified that PVRIG and TIGIT are part of a parallel and complementary inhibitory pathway in the DNAM axis, and we have preclinical data demonstrating that blocking PVRIG together with TIGIT may be required in certain tumor types in order to generate or enhance an anti-tumor immune response. In addition, our preclinical work, supported also by others, provides the foundation of our hypothesis that there is an intersection between the two pathways on the DNAM axis, PVRIG and TIGIT, and the PD-1 pathway. Specifically, our findings suggest that the simultaneous blockade of these three pathways has the potential to synergistically enhance antitumor immune responses in certain patient populations where the DNAM axis plays a role and who therefore are probably not responsive to PD-1 inhibitors alone. As such, the blockade of these two DNAM axis pathways have the potential to expand immuno-oncology treatment options to cancer patients who are not responsive to currently available drugs. It is quite remarkable to think that just a few quarters ago, of these three targets, only PD-1 was clinically validated. We have come a long way in a very short time and are thrilled to now have initial signs of clinical activity by PVRIG and TIGIT validated in the clinic by others. Taken together, these data increase our confidence in our hypothesis that in certain patient populations where these three pathways are dominant, blocking the DNAM axis and specifically the addition of PVRIG blockade to TIGIT and PD-1 blockers may be a critical component in driving cancer immunotherapy treatment responses. I want to dive in a bit more into PVRIG and TIGIT. It is important to recognize that while these are important complementary checkpoints in the same DNAM axis, they are in fact distinct. First, PVRIG and TIGIT bind preferentially to different ligands, PVRL2 and PVR respectively. In addition, and highly relevant to our clinical programs, PVRL2 and PVR are differentially expressed on different tumor types. Importantly, PVRL2 expression is more dominant compared to PVR in certain cancers such as breast, endometrial, and ovarian. This is significant because in these PVRL2 dominant indications, we expect that PVRIG must be blocked in order to drive antitumor immune responses. Furthermore, PVRL2 is more expressed on various myeloid populations, mainly DC subsets. These immune cell types have been shown recently to be important in the PD-1 pathway. In addition, PVRIG and TIGIT are not necessarily expressed on same immune cell types. While both expressed on T cells and NK cells, TIGIT is highly expressed on Tregs relative to PVRIG. These findings, with the totality of our functional data, suggest that PVRIG blockade should support synergistic effects with PD-1 and or TIGIT inhibitors and that these pathways are not redundant. Therefore, as the only company with wholly owned clinical assets targeting both PVRIG and TIGIT, we believe we're uniquely positioned to evaluate the blockade of the DNAM axis with and without PD-1 blockade and assess its potential to drive robust immune responses in patients. In line with our preclinical work, our initial clinical data suggest that COM701 treatment may indeed be relevant for certain cancer indications unresponsive to PD-1 treatment, such as ovarian and colorectal. As I discussed highlights from our trials, I would like to reiterate that our approach is strategic. We are rapidly advancing, in parallel, clinical programs that evaluate the potential of these candidates as monotherapy, as well as in dual and triple combination regimens that we believe will allow us to comprehensively extract the value of our drug candidates addressing these new checkpoints. So starting first with our COM701 clinical studies. In April, we presented at AACR the dose escalation data from both the COM701 monotherapy and combination arm with Bristol Myers Squibb's Opdivo. These data included all 8 monotherapy dose escalation cohorts and 4 of a total of 5 cohorts from the dual combination arm. We were thrilled to observe 2 partial responses, 1 from each arm, with both having presented very encouraging durable responses of more than 6 months as of the data cutoff date. We were also highly encouraged with both safety and tolerability and disease control rates in both arms. We believe the notable durability of responses observed with COM701 is particularly significant given that these results were achieved in a dose escalation setting and in heavily pretreated patients. Together, these data serve as an important initial clinical validation of PVRIG as a new immune checkpoint with a role in cancer immunotherapy. And we're excited to continue advancing this program for the many patients who are currently do not respond to available treatments, potentially because the dominant inhibitory checkpoints in their tumors were not being targeted. So what is next for COM701? This quarter, we initiated enrollment for the monotherapy expansion cohort, which is designed to evaluate the safety and tolerability of COM701 at the recommended dose for expansion. This study utilizes a biomarker-informed strategy to focus on tumor types where we believe the PVRIG pathway may play a role based on our preclinical DNAM axis expression data and dose escalation clinical results. We were excited to start this study, which was also met with strong interest from our principal investigators, and we're excited to share that the enrollment is progressing as planned. We remain on track to complete enrollment in 2020 and report initial data from this trial, as previously indicated, in the first half of 2021. We recently completed enrollment in fifth and last cohort of the combination dose escalation study of COM701 with Opdivo and intend to provide the additional cohort data most likely at the same time as the initial monotherapy expansion cohort data in the first half of 2021. Finally, moving to our triple combination study. We remain on track to begin the phase 1-2 study to evaluate COM701 in combination with Opdivo and Bristol Myers Squibb's anti-TIGIT antibody in the second half of this year, following the recent clearance of the IND by the FDA. We're working closely with Bristol Myers Squibb on this study and are very pleased with their continued support and involvement in our collaboration. This program allows us to directly test our hypothesis of an intersection between the PVRIG, TIGIT, and PD-1 pathways, and that the simultaneous blockade of these three pathways has the potential to synergistically enhance anti-tumor immune responses in selected patient populations not responsive or refractory to PD-1 blockers alone. As I have reviewed today, we believe there is now significant data, both clinical and preclinical, that support this strategy, and we look forward to leveraging our position with our wholly owned clinical candidates against both PVRIG and TIGIT. We're highly enthusiastic about this targeted, science-driven, clinical development program of COM701, which we believe has the potential to broaden the therapeutic benefit of checkpoint inhibitors to tumor types where they have previously not been successful. Moving next to COM902, our anti-TIGIT therapeutic antibody. As I mentioned earlier in the call, new data presented by others over the past few months provided important clinical validation of TIGIT as an immunotherapy checkpoint. We're thrilled to see this data, which we believe further supports our triple pathway hypothesis, and we're excited to initiate this quarter the dose escalation study of COM902. We anticipate disclosing initial data from this study next year. I would like to reiterate that while TIGIT is now a clinically validated target being evaluated by us and others in biopharma, Compugen is the only company with clinical assets targeting both PVRIG and TIGIT in its portfolio, allowing us to fully exploit the potential of blocking these parallel and complementary members of the DNAM axis to drive robust immune responses. Before I turn the call over to Henry, I would like to briefly touch upon the continued challenges associated with COVID-19. We're fortunate in that we're not experiencing significant impact on our activities for 2020. In fact, as indicated in our last call in May, we anticipate meeting our upcoming milestones and data readouts, including completing enrollment in the COM701 monotherapy expansion cohort this year, and disclosing initial data from the study in the first half of 2021, together with the data from the additional cohort of the dose escalation of COM701 in combination with Opdivo, as well as disclosing initial data from the COM902 dose escalation study in 2021. COVID-19 has introduced challenges in our work, and I'm enormously proud of our team having watched them rise to overcome the extraordinary circumstances we're facing. Their dedication allows us to continue to advance our programs with the ultimate hope of broadly expanding the reach of cancer immunotherapy. We're grateful to our partners, investigators, and shareholders, and look forward to continued progress. With that, I will turn the call over to Henry to review our clinical programs.
Thank you, Anat, and good day to everyone. As Anat already mentioned, in April, we presented at the first AACR virtual meeting the dose escalation data from both the COM701 monotherapy and combination arm with Bristol Myers Squibb's nivolumab. This data included all monotherapy dose escalation cohorts, which is now completed with 4 of 5 cohorts from the dual combination arm. We were highly encouraged with both safety and tolerability and initial anti-tumor activity with this data that showed disease control rates of 69% or 11 of 16 patients in the monotherapy arm and 75% or 9 out of 12 patients for the combination arm. We, as well as the principal investigators, were also encouraged to observe 2 partial responses. One partial response was from the monotherapy arm in a patient with microsatellite stable platinum-resistant primary peritoneal cancer, a type of ovarian cancer. And the second partial response was from the combination arm in a patient with microsatellite stable colorectal cancer. Both patients presented very encouraging durable responses of more than 6 months. I'd also like to remind you that both indications, ovarian and colorectal cancer, are included in our COM701 monotherapy expansion cohort, and we are eager to evaluate COM701 at the recommended dose for expansion in these tumor types that are generally unresponsive to immune checkpoint inhibition. I would also like to highlight the durability of responses observed in our ongoing phase 1 study with COM701. Across all cohorts, we reported durable responses of at least stable disease or partial response for over 6 months in 6 out of 28 patients, or 21% of patients, and in 2 of 6 patients, 33%, in microsatellite stable colorectal cancer. At the time of the presentation, 50% of patients, or 6 out of 12, in the combination arm remain on study with a number of patients on treatment for over 200 days. Taken together, the preliminary anti-tumor activity and durability of responses potentially serve as proof of concept that inhibition of PVRIG by COM701 is likely to translate into therapeutic benefit for patients. Looking at the next steps in this program, we have completed enrollment in the dose escalation combination arm of COM701 with nivolumab, and we continue to accrue clinical and laboratory data in these patients. In May, we announced that the first patient was dosed in the COM701 monotherapy cohort expansion. We plan to enroll a total of 20 patients with advanced solid tumors, including advanced non-small cell lung, ovarian, breast, endometrial, and colorectal cancer who have exhausted all available standard therapies. The key objective is to evaluate the safety and tolerability of COM701 at the recommended dose for expansion. Additional exploratory objective is the preliminary evaluation of the antitumor activity of COM701 monotherapy at the recommended dose for expansion. A third objective is to conduct retrospective biomarker analysis examining DNAM axis expression in biopsies obtained from patients before and during study treatment to inform on the DNAM axis and possibly to guide patient selection for other trials. We remain on track to complete enrollment in 2020 and report initial data from this trial in the first half of 2021. Our triple combination study is also advancing to the clinic. We recently announced IND clearance from the FDA for our planned phase 1/2 open-label study, which will evaluate the safety, tolerability, and anti-tumor activity of COM701 in combination with nivolumab and Bristol-Myers Squibb's anti-TIGIT antibody. The study will evaluate selected tumor types, namely ovarian cancer, endometrial cancer, as well as a biomarker-driven arm of tumor types with high expression of PDRL2. The study will dose escalate COM701 with fixed doses of nivolumab and BMS-986207. We remain on track to begin the study in the second half of this year. Despite the challenges of COVID-19, we also initiated our phase 1 dose escalation trial of COM902. Enrollment of patients in this study is on track. As of today, we have not observed significant impacts on enrollment of patients in our ongoing COM701 study. Having said that, we continue to remain in close contact with the principal investigators and sites to proactively monitor the situation. For us and the principal investigators, the safety of patients on the study remains our number one priority. Before turning the call over to Ari, I would like to second Anat's appreciation of the Compugen team for their strong execution in advancing our clinical studies, as well as to thank our investigators for their continued support and commitment to our studies, and of course, our patients and their families. Ari.
Thank you, Henry. Good morning and good afternoon to everyone. Our financial results for the second quarter of 2020 released this morning continue to reflect a solid financial position with an improved cash balance and linear expense structure, which gives us the flexibility and ability to move fast and evaluate the potential of our clinical programs in the various indications and combination. R&D expenses for the second quarter of 2020 were $4.4 million compared with $4.9 million for the same period in 2019. R&D expenses reflect costs associated with expanded clinical programs, which now include the COM701 monotherapy expansion cohorts, COM701 in combination with Opdivo dose escalation, and dose escalation study for COM902. Net loss for the second quarter of 2020 was $6.2 million or 8 cents per basic and diluted share, compared with a net loss of $6 million or 10 cents per basic and diluted share for the same period of 2019. As of June 30, 2020, we had approximately $136 million in cash and cash-related accounts, compared with approximately $121 million as of March 31, 2020. The increase in our cash balances of approximately $15 million during the second quarter is attributed to approximately $21 million of net proceeds received from exercise of warrants, exercise of employee options, and the partial exercise of underwriter's option in connection with our recent public offering, offset by our operating expenses and working capital needs. Going into the second half of 2020, our ongoing R&D expenses are expected to increase slightly as planned compared to the first half of 2020 to support the initiation of our phase 1-2 triple combination study. Our cash balance at the end of the year is expected to be above $120 million. Thank you for joining us today, and on behalf of the entire Compugen family, we hope you stay safe and healthy. Thank you, and with that, we will now open the call for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star 1. If you wish to decline from the polling process, please press star 2. If you are using speaker equipment, kindly lift the handset before pressing the numbers. Please stand by while we poll for your questions. The first question is from Stephen Willey from Stifel. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking the questions and congratulations on the progress. Maybe just a couple of questions regarding the triple trial that's going to initiate later this year. So I know the tumor type selection strategy here is going to be predicated on a PVRL2 biomarker. Can you speak to what you know about the correlation of PVRL2 high tumors and how that correlates to PD-L1 expression? And I guess, would you expect that the majority of these PVRL2 high tumors are going to be PD-L1 low or lower, just given that I suppose that would allow you to maybe better understand the contribution of COM701 to a backbone of TIGIT PD-1 in the context of maybe these PVRL2 high tumors mostly being PD-L1 low?
So, hi, Steve. So, in general, the data that we have and we shared is that there are tumor types that have PVRL2 high that are also PD-L1 low. And these are mostly the tumors that we selected to focus our studies on, the monotherapy and the triplet as well. But also PVRL2 high is also found on tumor types where there is a PD-L1 high. So it's not that it is only characterizing the PD-L1 low. But definitely when we look at the unmet need and where we think that the PVRIG pathway has a role, and that's the first that we want to test, is mostly on indications that are the breast, ovarian, endometrial, colorectal. But we also mentioned non-small cell lung cancer. And obviously there are additional indications where there is a PD-L1 high and PVRL2 high.
Okay. And then can you speak to what the starting dose of COM701 is going to be on a fixed background of TIGIT PD-1? And I guess when you think about biomarker strategy for the triple, what are the one or two biomarkers that you think will be the most important in terms of providing a surrogate of on-target PVRIG activity? Thanks.
So I'll start with the biomarker question, and then I'll let Henry answer the dose of COM701 question. So on the biomarker front, obviously we have our hypothesis that is based on preclinical data and also analysis of human tumor samples that we were conducting. But at the end of the day, we're still at the exploratory stage. We are going to test not only PVRL2, by the way. We're looking to look at different DynaMaxis members. We're also going to look at different and other biomarkers. We want to understand how the tumor microenvironment looks like pre-treatment and on treatment. So we're going to collect all this information and look at it. At the end of the day, the study that we're conducting, the triplet study that we're conducting, we do aim to look at the PVRL2 high patient populations, but until we get to this point, which we still need to go through the start the study and go through the dose escalation, we will collect biomarker information and be more educated about the hypothesis that we have.
All right. Thank you very much. Go ahead, Steve.
Oh, no, Henry, I was just going to ask you about the starting dose.
Yes. So the starting dose we haven't disclosed, but safe to say that the dose we will select will be informed by the dose will be informed by the dose that we've observed on the monotherapy study and also the dual combination dose escalation part of the COM701 study also. And the other things that we're going to use to determine the starting dose are things that correlate with the PD and the PK of COM701. As the study starts to enroll and starts to generate data, we'll be able to disclose the doses that we've used, both the starting dose and the dose escalation doses subsequently. But as a reminder, the doses of BMS-986207, the TIGIT antibody, and the dose of nivolumab are fixed. So they're both 480 milligrams each, and the dose that will be escalating will be the dose of COM701.
Understood. Thanks for taking the questions.
The next question is from Diana Graybach of SVB Leerink. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Dana. Thank you so much for the question. Two for me. The first sort of staying on the triplet and the plans for understanding the signal. I think, you know, with the triplet and single arm data, one worry I have is how we're going to untangle the contribution from PVRIG, TIGIT, and PD-1. I wonder if you can speak to what would be a really great signal. Do you think we can start to get an efficacy signal for the triplet in this sort of dose escalation and cohort expansion? Or can you speak to when you might plan to move into randomized trials to get a stronger signal?
So hi Dana. I'll start and I'll let Henry add. I'll just say that obviously it's a phase 1/2 study, but we didn't share the design yet. And this is obviously it's hard to answer your question without really being able to answer about to share the design. But this, you know, we will share the design after we start the study. Also, I'll say that while your question is completely relevant, I'll just mention that we're addressing tumor types that are not responsive to PD-1 blockers, and this is it may make it a little bit easier to compare to historical data of these drugs and assess the contribution of COM701, but definitely you are correct. We, in our studies, we're still at the stage of signal seeking, but in the triplet, obviously, we will need to relate to randomization at a certain point. So this is what I'll say. Henry, would you like to add anything on this?
Yeah, I'd just like to add that. It's a very good question, Dana. One of the things that is going to be helpful for us in determining the contribution of COM701 in the triplet study is the data that we've already accrued from the monotherapy study, dose escalation, and the patients that we're also enrolling on the expansion cohort with COM701 monotherapy. In addition, the patients that we have on the dose escalation with COM701 nivolumab will also inform on what the relative contribution of COM701 is when added to nivolumab. What to note specifically is that we're fortunate in the sense that So, for example, for the monotherapy dose expansion cohort that is currently enrolling, that we have patients that are very similar to the patients that will enroll in the triplet dose expansion cohort. So that will inform, in a way, what the probable relative contribution of COM701 is. But at the end, in summary, I think a randomized study is what will actually be able to provide definitive proof of what the contribution of COM701 is. The other thing to add, Dana, is you asked about what the responses and anti-tumor activity that will help us delineate the contribution, infer the contribution of COM701. What Anat has already mentioned in our prepared comments is that the patient population that we're actually enrolling on this study are patients with ovarian cancer, patients with endometrial cancer, and patients with high expression of PDL2. These are patients who have exhausted all available therapies. And therefore, it really will not be too difficult to see, when you compare to historical control, what the contribution of COM701 with the other two components are, if that's higher in the triplet compared to either what the patients came in with in terms of responses before they became enrolled on the study, or historical data, like data from patients who have been exposed to immune checkpoints with ovarian cancer on breast or endometrial cancer, which is typically low-digit numbers, maybe around 9, 10%, and if one is generous, maybe up to about 12, 15%. If those numbers are higher in the triplet, then you know we have a signal. So those are the ways we're looking at it.
Maybe one follow-up on that. So it all makes a lot of sense, but I guess the challenge is we don't have any data with TIGIT and PVRIG on its own to sort of tease out the relative contributions of those two novel, in parallel pathways. And I wonder if you could speak to that.
So, go ahead, Henry. Go ahead.
Yeah, so it's correct that we don't have data, conclusive data, that is. Of course, there are data in small subsets of patients who've been enrolled on other studies, but not the study that we're currently conducting. But, Dana, what's important is that if we're looking at the patient population and the DNAM axis as a whole, and we're observing that the responses or the anti-tumor activity that we're observing in that study, the triplet study, is higher compared to what the historical data is, that still leaves open the plan to have randomization, where not only are we trying to figure out what the contribution of COM701 is, but the randomization will be done in such a way that we're also inferring what the contribution of the TIGIT antibody is. So it's not just trying to figure out what the contribution of one component is. We'll have to figure out the relative contributions through a randomized study of the other components also. And that's the only appropriate way to determine this.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And one more piece of information for this, and this, you know, it's not a direct comparison, but it would allow us to also better understand, is the study that we're planning to conduct with the our TIGIT inhibitor and COM701 as a doublet. And that's, you know, that will also allow us to better understand the relative contribution as compared to PD-1 itself. So there are different combinations here, and we will need to make sure that we compare it well, apples to apples, and do the right randomizations at the right time.
Great. And then one more question for me, sort of on the biology, asking you to speculate and hear your hypotheses. I think we now see four different triple mechanisms with TIGIT and PD-1. We see, of course, PVRIG. We see adenosine. We saw recently EMD Serono posted a trial combining their TGF-beta trap with their own TIGIT, and then, of course, chemo. And I wonder if you think across all those mechanisms of triplet, you know, why PVRIG stands out to you as the best mechanism to add on top versus the other three.
It's really on based on our analysis as to where these pathways are dominant, and it won't be relevant for all the patient populations, but in certain patient populations where these three pathways or two of them are dominant, you'll need to block and to release this negative costimulatory effect. So it doesn't rule out that in other patients you'll get some additional response when you combine with additional mechanisms of action. But we think that in tumor types where the two or three of the pathways are there and are signaling negative inhibitory signals, you'll need to block them. So this is our focus.
Helpful. Thank you. That's all for me. Thank you very much.
The next question is from Mark Breidenbach of Oppenheimer. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. It's Matt on for Mark. Thanks for the update. Anat or Henry, just wondering how you're looking at the Roche TIGIT data and whether or not it's affecting your development plans for 902. Should we expect further emphasis in lung cancers going forward, or do you anticipate kind of letting the data kind of guide you?
Hi, Matt. I'll let Henry describe the clinical aspect, but I'll just say that from our perspective, being able to see the TIGIT pathway being clinically validated in a randomized study, yes, one indication, but it's validated in a randomized study, it gives us more comfort because, as I mentioned in our prepared remarks, when we started this path and when we came up with this hypothesis, only the PD-1 pathway was clinically validated. And right now we have some signs for the TIGIT, we have very initial signs for PVRIG, so we get more comfortable with our plan forward and with our strategy for a combination. So it's just strengthening our belief in the hypothesis. Our plan for COM-902 remain the same, but I'll let Henry, would you like to relate to the clinical front?
Yes, thank you very much, Mark. The thing to say in addition to what Anat said is that what we are doing strategically for COM-902 is independent of what other competitors are doing. We are doing things with the science guiding essentially all the tumor types that we're selecting, the combinations that we're going to be doing, and we've already disclosed in our corporate deck that for COM-902, one of the key things is to look at the PD-1 and the PD-L1 free regimen where we're combining COM-902 and COM-701 in the tumor types that are relevant. So the combination strategy is independent and it's driven by the science, like Anat has mentioned.
Got it, makes sense. And then maybe another question on 902. Could you speak to any differences in the structure of the antibody, specifically between the Roche and Bristol TIGIT antibodies? Are there any features that you think, you know, might improve on safety or efficacy? Thanks.
Yeah, later on answer this question.
Yes, so basically both antibodies are blockers of the TIGIT-PVR interaction. I would say that the main difference that is highly discussed also is the Fc, the binding to Fc receptors. Obviously, Genentech has the human IgG1, which binds Fc receptors, and BMS-1 has a mutated IgG1, which does not bind Fc receptors. And there are a lot of debates about this issue, whether Fc receptor binding is important or not. And I think this could be looked at from three aspects. One is that most of the motivation to use an antibody that binds Fc receptors for TIGIT mostly came from murine studies. And actually the Fc receptor system, the murine system, is very different from the human, the composition, the identity of cell types, etc. So to use murine studies to choose Fc isotype of antibody is a bit challenging and problematic. The second part, which is highly linked to the first one, is that the history taught us that this is maybe a problematic way. For CTLA-4, for example, in the murine studies, a very strong depletion of Tregs with CTLA-4, and actually ipilimumab does not do that. And also PD-L1 was shown to be more efficient actually to require Fc receptor binding for its activity in the mouse. And this is not what we see in the clinic from antibodies that bind or do not bind the PD-L1. So this is for the translatability from mouse to human of Fc receptor binding. And lastly, when you have a human IgG1 antibody like Genentech, while you have maybe the potential to deplete suppressive cells like Tregs, you also have the potential to deplete effector cells like CD8 and NK cells that you actually, these are the same type of cells you want to enhance their activity. So we chose to focus on a pure blocker since the expression pattern of TGT is overlapping between Tregs and effector cells. So basically, we chose to focus on a pure blocker like the PD-1 blockers to enhance activity of T cell and NK cells without depleting of without the risk of depleting no Treg and also effector cells.
Awesome! Congrats on the progress, guys.
The next question is from Ashtika Gunwarden of SunTrust. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Ashtika from SunTrust here. Thank you for taking my questions. So the preclinical data has suggested that PVRIG inhibition induces TIGIT and PD-1 expression. So I'm wondering, is there logic to taking a sequencing strategy when you're thinking of dosing your triple combination? Then I have a follow-up after that.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting idea, but I think that this in vitro induction that we see, it will be difficult to translate into dosing sequences in patients. Basically, in terms of biology, yes, the PVRIG upregulates the two other pathways, and this may explain in part the synergism between all these three pathways. But I think that to link this into kinetics of upregulation in patients will be a bit challenging.
Got it. Okay, and then I know COVID had a bit of an overhang in terms of recruitment for all clinical trials, but I'm just wondering, has the presentation at AACR impacted your recruitment rates on your ongoing study?
Henry?
Yes, Astika. So we've received a lot of inquiries about enrollment into our clinical study. Since Dr. Ryan Sullivan from Mass General Hospital presented at AACR, like Anat said in our prepared comments, fortunately for us at this time, we have not been adversely impacted by the COVID pandemic. In fact, we've seen a lot of interest, not just by the investigators, but an interest from also patient groups also wanting to participate in our clinical trial. And hopefully this continues. So we haven't been adversely impacted by the COVID. And in fact, we've been helped by the presentation that Dr. Ryan Sullivan gave at AACR.
Great. Thanks, guys, for taking my questions. That's all from me.
The next question is from Colin White of Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hello, it's Colin White from Jefferies here. I just had one question. It was about yesterday, GSK announced that they've moved their anti-CD96 into clinical development. The first patient has been dosed in a phase one study. So I just wondered if CD96 was that a target that you looked at. You know, what you think about that as a target, like why you maybe pursued PVRIG instead, or if you think that this might, you know, be a competitive threat or it might be something that could be used possibly in combination. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. So obviously we have years of research of this DNAM axis, so obviously we're taking a look also on the CD96, the letter on related.
Yes, so basically CD96 binds PVR like TIGIT, and it doesn't bind PVRL2 like PVRIG. So I would say the pathway is related to PVRIG because, of course, it's part of the DNAM axis, but it's not highly related to PVRIG because it doesn't bind the same ligand. In addition, the affinity of CD96 to PVR is actually one log lower than the affinity of TG to PVR. So then comes the question is how dominant is this target compared to TIGIT in terms of binding to PVR and activity. And finally, the biology of CD96 is a bit more complex. I mean, for example, there are some human mouse differences. In the human, there is an intracellular part which is different from the mouse, which actually indicates activatory signal, potential activatory signal. And indeed, in our hands, we actually checked and also published, we didn't see any checkpoint inhibitor activity of CD96. Using blocking antibodies. Genentech recently published a paper in which they actually claimed that CD96 in the human is costimulatory molecule. On the other hand, indeed, the initial mouse studies did point for an inhibitory checkpoint activity of CD96 in the mouse. And GSK are pursuing, from what we understand from the press release, they are pursuing a blocker antibody. So the biology is maybe complex, and we need to see more data from GSK, why they think differently from Genentech, for example, who published a costimulatory role. And again, even if it is a negative checkpoint, we need to see its dominance since it binds a bit weaker to PVR compared to TIGIT.
That's great. Thank you very much.
The next question is from Rennie Benjamin of JMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Justin Walsh on for Rennie. Given the mechanism of action of COM701, the combination approach, of course, makes a lot of sense to us. Could you provide some color on your reasoning behind choosing to test nivolumab over other PD-1 or PD-L1 inhibitors? And then to follow up with that, if you do see positive results with Nivo in either the doublet or the triplet, should we expect that you'd stick with Nivo as a combo partner longer term for COM701, or do you have plans to potentially explore other checkpoint inhibitors?
Yes, thank you. So the selection of Nivo over other drugs was not specifically because we think that Nivo is a very different PD-1 blocker compared to other PD-1 blockers. So we had our own business reasons, and that's the reason for selection. Obviously, as long as we have the collaboration and with BMS, we will continue to work closely with them and use Nivo. At the end of the day, we look at it as a proof of concept for the combination with PD-1 blockers. And it doesn't mean that in the future, COM701 can't be combined with a completely different PD-1 blocker. It's really serving us as a way to prove the hypothesis and obviously to do business with the BMS.
Perfect. Thank you very much. That's all for me.
The next question is from Tony Butler of Roth Capital. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you. I have three brief questions, if I may, and I'll just recite them all at once, if that's okay. Number one is that COM701, correct me if I'm wrong, but doses once every 4 weeks, and obviously Nivo and what you are attempting to do with 902 or every three weeks. Is there any thought as to perhaps creating a change such that it may be easier, certainly for the patient to come in and have dosing for all three, if you will, every three weeks as opposed to one, which would be every four? That's question one. Number two is, obviously, Tregs in the tumor microenvironment are not necessarily beneficial. In a TIGIT-positive Treg in the tumor microenvironment, you also have upregulation of TIM-3. And some companies have moved forward with anti-TIM-3 antibodies. I'm just curious of your view of TIM-3 in a dominant negative regulatory sense and how that may stick out as a potential impediment, if you will, even under the triple combination scenario. And then the final question is on PD-1 refractory patients. do you know or can you hypothesize, is PVRL2, does it change, does the expression change from, say, potentially a naive tumor that hasn't seen PD-1 to one that then has seen PD-1 and has become refractory? One might anticipate that PVRL2 stays the same, alternatively, that it diminishes in its expression. I'm just curious. I don't know that data. I'm sure you do. Thank you very much.
So, yes, thank you. I'll start with your last question about PVRL2. That's, you know, we are at the exploratory stage. We will collect data from biopsies, pre-treatment, on-treatment, patients that did go treatment with the PD-1 and were refractory or not. So we will have this information. As of now, we still do not have any such clinical information, so we can't really refer to this. I let Henry address the Q4 weekly question. Henry?
Yes, thank you, Anna. Tony, good question. So if you remember, we already disclosed data on the PK profile of COM701 at SITC last year. And with that data we disclosed on the PK, it showed that we can actually dose COM701 at Q3 weeks dosing also. And more recently, we disclosed data from Mass General Dr. Ryan Sullivan's presentation at AACR that we can also dose Q4 weekly. The dosing that we have selected for COM902 is based on what the preclinical data shows. During the course of the clinical trial that we are currently on, that we're currently undergoing now, we will be able to better define what the PK profile of COM902 is based on the data that we collect from the patients on the study, and then that will inform what the eventual dosing paradigm that we're going to use will be at the recommended dose for expansion or the selected dose. So that's how we intend to do that. Now, if it's Q3 weeks or Q4 weeks, we're in very good position because we can do either of those in combination with COM701.
And
thank you. And then the yes, thank you. And yes,
yeah, with respect to Team 3 and TIGIS, later on related.
Well, Team 3 is obviously another player in the tumor microenvironment. It's actually the more dominant expression of TIM3 is probably on maybe more on myeloid cells. So some people envision it more as a myeloid target. But in general, one needs to look at the dominance of each of the pathway, TIM3 and its ligands, how dominant they are. Until now, the clinical results, well, they are still evolving, but I'm not sure we've seen something very convincing to this point. And so as TIM3, there are also other players in tumor microenvironment that maybe should overcome in some tumor settings. But we are moving into indication in which we think that our pathways are dominant, and that's why oncological intervention in these tumor types will make clinical benefits.
Thank you for your time.
This concludes our Q&A session. I will now turn the call back to Compugen's President and CEO. Dr. Cohen Dayag, would you like to make your concluding statement?
Thank you. We're very pleased with the progress we're making across our clinical programs. We have met important milestones so far this year, and we anticipate providing multiple data readouts from our ongoing COM701 and COM902 Phase 1 studies in 2021, as I have detailed in my prepared comments. Our clinical development plan is designed to strategically evaluate the DINAM axis as a potentially transformative checkpoint axis for cancer immunotherapy treatment, and we're uniquely positioned to test this hypothesis and the potential contribution of PVRIG in expanding immuno-oncology treatment options beyond PD-1 blockers. Our confidence in the validity of our hypothesis, which we first introduced when only PD-1 was clinically validated, has grown in recent months given the preliminary anti-tumor activity of COM701 treatment we have shown and the clinical validation of TIGIT by others. We look forward to continue updating you on our progress throughout the year. Thank you all for joining us today. Stay safe and healthy.
Thank you. This concludes the Compugen Ltd. second quarter 2020 financial results conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may go ahead and disconnect.